Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison, and this is a very special episode. Maybe it's your first episode listening to us.
Yeah, we say welcome at the top of every show, and I think it's never been more...
You've never been more welcome than you are today.
than this specific episode, what could be many people's first episode.
God, what if that works? What if we get new listeners, Adam? What would that be like?
That's a dragon we've been chasing for years. Never caught it.
So we were asked by our beloved network, MaximumFun.org, to make an episode that would be a intro to our show, and that was kind of a curveball. We were not expecting this as a project, and...
Now, wow. You and I have lived the last couple months extremely busy self-producing our show and recording a number of episodes. Maximum Fun presupposes is that maybe we have the bandwidth for an extra show.
Maybe we
just
need
for
a couple of extra stuff. But anyways, we're here to try and introduce ourselves and our show to you, a prospective listener. Maybe you're not even listening during the Max Fun block party. Maybe you're listening years from now.
After our inevitable deaths.
Yeah. Well, do you want to talk about like who we are for a second, Adam, and then what we do?
Yeah. I mean, you and I met many years ago, and it was our shared love of Star Trek The Next Generation that brought us together.
Yeah.
We didn't really know each other at that point. Like our friendship was built on the foundation of Star Trek. And as we got to know each other better over that next year, we started to joke around a lot about our shared knowledge of this show and agreed that it might make a really fun project to do as a podcast.
Yeah, and so if you are the kind of person that is a completionist and you want to go back to the original episodes of this show, I've been...
The original and unremastered, pre-Lucas fucked out versions of our show.
I've been going through a lot of old episodes over the last couple of days to get the show sheet ready for this record, and listening to some of those old ones, like, it's very like mixed emotions, obviously, because as any creative person will tell you, like, your early work sometimes sometimes makes you cringe. You see the things that you would have done differently if you had to do it over again.
Right.
But also it's very like fun and charming to hear us talking about, oh, we're recording these episodes dark and we're never going to release them. And we don't anticipate anyone will ever listen to this show that has now become our full-time jobs.
Yeah, that's really the truth.
So, I mean, we've been on this ride for about 5 years now, and The Greatest Generation is a Star Trek podcast that now has a spinoff in The Greatest Discovery, and we've worked our way through Star Trek The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and as of this recording, we're just getting into Voyager. We're in season two right now.
And as the Star Trek industrial complex keeps cranking them out, so too will we, into the future.
Yeah, so, and that's what The Greatest Discovery was started to accommodate, is our reviews of all the new Star Trek shows. So, I think of the two shows as being very much companions to each other. So hopefully if you're listening to this, you'll give both of them a try.
Yeah. mostly because the network asked for a intro episode for every show, and we're doing one for both.
Yeah, we had to put our foot down somewhere. I'm just thinking back to like the early days of us making The Greatest Generation, and my wife had quit her lawyer job to go work in politics for literally zero money. She took a job that was 3 months at a salary of nothing. And at that time we were living in New York, and so I was like, crap, I need to get like a salaried job so that I don't, so that we don't like miss rent and stuff, because I was a freelance video producer at the time, as were you. And I talked about The Greatest Generation in my job interview for the job I eventually got.
I can't believe you got that job.
I can't either.
That's usually a career killer.
Yeah, but my my boss, who was a great guy and is still a friend, is a, you know, a fan of Star Trek, and he put it to me this way. He said, like, God, that is like such a great idea for a podcast, just the having a beer with a bud talking about an episode of Star Trek you just watched. And that's always kind of like distilled what the show is to me. I mean, like, we try to like take it somewhat seriously and give a review at the ends of episodes, but also you and I are both film production people by training and by trade.
Right. And that's an experience we bring to every show as well.
Yeah. So it's a mix of that stuff and also us just being goofballs and joking around and trying to make each other laugh. And so the idea for this intro episode that we had was maybe we would go back through some clips of old episodes and kind of show our work, some favorite bits that have become kind of part of the DNA of the show, and survey that stuff for a new listener, and also just kind of like re-examine that stuff for ourselves.
That sounds like fun. Yeah, I mean, this project has had like what, more than 500 episodes combined.
Oh yeah, easy.
And yeah, there definitely is a language. And
there are a couple of good ones in there.
Yeah. And what we've done is we found the four best jokes from those 500 episodes.
So the other thing that is like absolutely mind-blowing to me is that we started as a twice weekly show.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great idea by us. We surveyed the podcast landscape and saw the comments that we would receive right away when we started putting out episodes, which was, why are you doing a Star Trek podcast? There are already many Star Trek podcasts out there.
Yeah.
And so one of the ways we saw to fit in was to build the library of episodes as fast as possible, because the existing shows out there were already into the hundreds. And we were like, well, if we want to be legitimate,
yeah,
we need to get to 100 episodes as soon as possible. And so that's why we went twice a week for the entire run of Greatest Generation.
Of Next Generation. Yeah. And I think that we were also thinking about like binge watching as a, you know, if you want to watch The Next Generation, there's nothing stopping you from watching another episode after you finish one. So if we're and I feel like binge watching was very like trendy in 2016 in a way that it's a little bit more eye roll now.
Yeah. If you've never heard an episode of The Greatest Generation before, you'll probably find out very quickly that this is the sort of podcast with a explicit lyric sticker on it.
Yeah.
Like, so that was another aspect to our show that I think distinguished itself, is that like we do veer into the dick and fart joke pretty regularly. We do use profanity all the time. We are drunk on many episodes. So if those are aspects to your podcast consumption that you find abhorrent,
which I know a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
Maybe you try a different Star Trek podcast besides this one.
Don't try this one and then leave a bad review.
Yeah.
You've been warned.
Yeah, that's sort of the deal with Star Trek, right? Infinite types of podcasts, and infinite amount of diversity.
Yeah.
And language or otherwise.
And in our case, infinite dicks.
Right. I am the cutest of all. Lock faces on that vessel.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights. This was a show that we really kind of invented on the fly and came up with stuff on the fly.
We built the dick jokes as we were flying them.
Yeah. One of our segments that we've really become known for is the Drunk Shimoda segment toward the end of every episode. And that happened in episode 2 of season 1 of Star Trek The Next Generation. So this is the moment that gave us the Drunk Shimoda segment. Riker and the chief engineer lady are racing to get the force field down
so that they can get into the section of engineering and get the ship started up again. The star is getting closer and closer to collapsing, and they finally get it down, and they realize that all of these isolinear chips that control the warp engine, I guess, have been pulled out by drunk Shimoda, and it's going to take like hours to put them all back in because there's hundreds of them.
Can we get a drunk Shimoda Weird Al Yankovic song, like My Sharona? We gotta do that drop in this episode.
Oh yeah. Should we just try and like riff a couple of bars?
Drunk Shimoda. Yeah.
So there.
Wow, we nailed that for the first time.
Yeah, the drop that we still play is the audio from that episode, which is pretty nuts.
That's great.
I think that's the earliest drop. That
I'm glad I took my sound baffling a little more seriously later on.
Yeah, there's some episodes of that show where I was like up in New Hampshire because my wife was working on like a presidential primary. So I'm like in the basement of some lady's house with like a microphone plugged into my iPad. And the sound can be a little bit rough, let's just say.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, what people have told us over the years is that that's part of the fun. And it's not just that that technically we've gotten better as podcasters. It's that jokes that we crafted, I'm putting that word in quotes, in the very beginning of our show's run, we continue to do. And references that we began making years and years ago are still ones that we make today. It makes for a pretty satisfying experience to see, to see the whole thing come together over a period of years.
Yeah, and there's plenty of other jokes that we've blessedly retired.
Sure. Yeah, they don't all live forever.
One that has also stuck around for a long time is the word "nuck," which is an abbreviation of moose knuckle, which in those. Especially in like early seasons of Star Trek: The Next Generation, but also like all through Deep Space Nine and Voyager, to be honest, like the costume department turned out a lot of outfits for male characters that showed off some dong in a pretty eye-catching way. And there's that episode, Justice, where they go to the planet where everybody is super chill and fucks unless you make one mistake and then you're immediately put to death.
Right.
And that episode, I believe, in our show was entitled Rockin' Nuck. And this next clip I want to play just because I thought it was a very funny, like, it was a very funny example of like the way we dealt with blowback early on, which was like very different from the way we deal with blowback now.
Like, oh, interesting.
Like when we get like, you know, like when you put something out in the world and you get a shitty comment, it can sting. And I feel like we have learned a ton about like how to best handle that over the years. I think this is an example of us not handling that great, but it was still kind of like funny to re-listen to. So I thought I'd play this.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Hey, this is Adam and Ben with a special message for you. I think first of all, we just want to thank everyone for all of the nice reviews we've received over the last week especially. But something was brought to our attention, Ben, and I think you're the best person to address it.
I'm very upset about this, Adam. Some person has gone on iTunes and left a review that takes exception to our usage of the term moose knuckle in the episode about the Edo, in which Wesley is running around with the kids and falls into the flower patch and is nearly put to death over it.
Let me read to you the message, Ben, that we got on our iTunes review. Subject line, moose knuckle, 1 star, by Jimbo925. Hey Beavis and Butthead, moose knuckle is used for a woman's private parts, not a man's. Think about it.
I really don't agree with that. I think that if anything, moose knuckle refers to any situation in which pants are bunched up around genitalia in an amusing way. And if you go on Urban Dictionary, I feel like that corroborates what I feel about the term.
I mean, yeah, you actually have an Urban Dictionary account. Like, you actually have to log into Urban Dictionary. That's how into it you are.
I just feel like this is a huge miscarriage of justice. And if I just don't think that we should have to suffer this one-star review because some idiot doesn't like our usage of the term moose knuckle. In many ways, it's my favorite review we've ever gotten, but I don't like that it's only one star. And the only way I can see to claw back at some justice for us is if everybody listening right now goes to iTunes and leaves a nice 5-star review to bury this, essentially.
Yeah, let's hold it underwater until the bubbles stop.
Yeah, and go ahead and go find that review, and it asks if the review was helpful. Click no, and report a concern. If anybody is rocking nuck, it's this guy.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get this thing wiped off the page. I think it's a bunch of bullcrap.
Do the right thing, listener. Go to iTunes. Help the greatest generation right this horrible, horrible wrong.
All right, we'll get you back to the show now. Thanks, guys. Wow, if we only took that kind of time for...
I know.
For the number of comments we received lately. Jeez. If I personally wrote back or recorded a message for everyone who had a problem with the show because they didn't get the joke...
Right.
It would be a full-time job.
Yeah. The podcast would long ago have turned into just us addressing that exact kind of post. I mean, it's funny, like those early days, like there were definitely people that really like made a point of like getting in our faces about it. And I feel like either I've gotten better at not noticing that or those people have gotten quieter, but definitely there was a kind of Star Trek fan that like could not wrap their mind around that the show being sort of comedy oriented.
Right, because what we learned very early, by and large, I think initially when we started putting out the show, we heard from a lot of people who take Star Trek very seriously.
Yeah.
And what happened not long after that was a slower growing groundswell of people who had felt this way about Star Trek all along, who had never really found other people who saw fit to make fun of the thing that they loved the way we do. And so we found out after a period of months, you know, just how many more people are interested in laughing with us about the show than taking it very, very seriously.
Yeah. I mean, we take it seriously, too. It's just that we have a lot of fun talking to each other and making each other laugh. So
right.
If other people can enjoy that, too, that rules. So this next clip that I queued up is one that I have a very fond memory of this episode. It's the episode where Worf is bumming out, and it's because there's some like ceremony that he's supposed to do, and they set it up for him in the holodeck, and it's like this like really like sweet friendship moment between some of the bridge officers and Worf. Mm-hmm. And the thing I remember fondly about the episode is that it was a really like collaborative edit between the two of us. Like, I think I was in the driver's seat on the edit, but it was a tough thing to like get figured out, like exactly how to work the scene that we're about to play. And you and I went back and forth a bunch, and in kind of getting it dialed in and figured out, I think we both kind of learned some big stuff about what our show sounds like and what kinds of things we do in post-production.
Right.
And it's a very heavily edited show. It may, I don't know, some episodes may sound more edited than others, I guess, but we make like hundreds and hundreds of edits per episode. And it's something that we've always taken really seriously. So this is like a one that I think back on as having been like a big growth moment for me in learning how to edit. But it's also comedy that kind of like comes into the show in the editing process. Like, we didn't talk about it ahead of time. It was like an idea that came up in post-production, and like we figured out how to make it work.
As a creative project, I think it's so much more satisfying to have that split work the way you're describing.
Yeah.
Like, we have from the start edited every other episode, you and I, and we always QA the episodes collaboratively. You're always trying to make my edits funnier. I'm always trying to do the same with yours. Like, it's,
which can't be done. My edits are so fucking funny.
Yeah, they're perfectly formed by the time they ever get heard by me. But yeah, and I think for projects you do with friends that last an extremely long time, I think, you know, a lot of people have asked us at live shows, like, how do you do this? How do you do this with a friend specifically? And I think we were fortunate to begin with that kind of equilibrium of equal effort at all times. You've described it before as both of us going 60% of the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that is absolutely what we do and what we've done for the entire run.
So this is that clip. This is like an old time favorite of mine.
Worf's bar mitzvah is, it involves him walking down this central channel as the Klingon warriors standing above him hit him with the pain sticks.
I travel the river of blood.
We just got an email from a listener who found his Worf toy from when he was a kid, like the Worf action figure included some pain sticks, and he took a picture of these, and they're just like comically dildonic looking in the Kenner plastic representation of them.
There is no other thing they could be besides giant dildos.
Like they must have like repurposed them from some hentai action figure from Japan, right? You know, like they're like, oh, we got a bunch of purple dildos that scale to being about 4 feet long. What are we going to do with them? I don't know. Throw them in with the Worf toys and make them pain sticks or something.
Oh, man. And this, he sets it up in a little diorama where it's like Worf and Riker, and they're both staring at each other holding these giant dildos. It's kind of a perfect scene.
Yeah, it's like Worf and Riker have made one holodeck program that they can both really get into.
Imagine the scenes you could act out with those figures and those props.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
So he just walks down the middle of this channel and gets pain stickified and yells a lot of shit in English and Klingon.
The fire of the vanquish blows over my hands.
The idea is that you're supposed to confide your innermost feelings at those moments. So you say something that's very personal to you, and then you get stabbed.
Yeah.
And then you do it again and again and again until you arrive at the end where John Tesh hits you with a pain stick. John Tesh in Klingon regalia hits you with a pain stick. This is true. Did you know this?
No.
He plays one of the Klingons in this scene.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Entertainment Tonight's John Tesh.
Anyways.
Klingon John Tesh.
That was one of our rare moments of actually doing research on an episode to reveal a fun guest star. You and I, over the years, have really enjoyed the many interesting and unusual guest stars that Star Trek has had over the years. Yeah. John Tesh being one of them.
So wild. John Tesh. You think Yanni was ever in an episode, just kind of secretly?
How would we know? They bury their guests under all that loaf.
Yeah. That would never happen today. Like, today it would be like, you're going to be in the episode and then we need you to tweet about it 400 times. And like, we're going to do promoted tweets about how, you know, Lil Nas X is playing an Andorian in the background of this episode.
Yeah, there's no getting away with it these days.
No. So, Adam, people may be surprised to learn that this is not the first clip show we've ever done.
That's right. Our first clip show happened in our second season, which is hilarious to think about, only bested by the idea that Star Trek The Next Generation itself had a clip show in its second season. And so we thought, in a bit of very Adam and Ben style meta humor, what if in reviewing the TNG clip show, we created a Greatest Gen clip show in doing it?
Yeah. And so the extremely high concept thing we came up with was, okay, so in the episode, Riker has to experience all of these moments again in his memory. So we'll just edit in clips of us talking about the moments he's remembering into, like we went back through seasons 1 and 2 of our show, found those moments in our show, and edited them into the thing as a clip. But boy, I'm gonna play this. This, it really surprised me, like how green we were as podcasters, just based on how this clip plays out. They wheel over this rig of brain needles, and
it's sort of like you know, like the immobilizing cage. If you have a severe neck injury, they'll put the cage around your head and they'll actually screw it into your skull. Like that's a modern medical device that I'm sure you're familiar with. This is sort of like the horizontal version of that. If you're laying in a bed the way Riker is.
Yeah. And this fucking thing scared the pants off me when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, the effect is really good of the needles stabbing into his head.
Yeah. They're like maybe like 6 or 8 needles that are meant to be going into his brain.
Yeah.
And so what they're trying to do is stimulate his brain. And the idea is that active neural patterns will resist the virus for some reason.
We aren't meant to understand that.
Yeah. So this has the effect of putting him into a dream state, and so this is our first like kind of cross dissolve as the camera pushes into his face and we go into Riker's head.
They beam down and something on the planet's surface has caused the transporter beams to scramble them all over the planet's surface, so Riker finds himself totally alone on the surface of the planet, and there's this very weird scene where he like goes out onto a cliff and yells,
"Anybody!"
He then just turns and walks away from the cliff and finds everybody in the other direction.
Like, he basically does that thing where he screams into a thunderstorm. Also, major props to the set dressing department, breaking out the dry ice in a real yeah, big-time way.
Totally. I think it's the first kind of primitive or undeveloped planet surface that we see in the whole series. So this is like, this is the unveiling of the like styrofoam rocks and and very close-up psych that become kind of watchwords of exterior set design in Star Trek The Next Generation.
That's our first clip, everybody.
Yeah, should we maybe intro how we're going to do this from here on out?
I guess, yeah.
Because I thought you were talking. It was very disorienting for me.
Oh my God, do you know what we just did?
We did a clip show.
We just put a clip show inside a clip show inside a clip show.
I know.
This is like the end of Enter the Dragon. Oh man.
That's pretty much where we peaked, Adam.
Yeah. I mean, you want to make it to your first clip show, and then syndication is going to be not long after, right?
Yeah, that's also the first time we talked about the clip within the clip is the first time we talked about Anybody Canyon, which is a term we come back to pretty often. And I thought later in this episode, you and I could go through some of the weirder terms that we use on The Greatest Generation and The Greatest Discovery and see if we can agree on their origins and meanings.
Oh yeah, sort of Greatest Generation dictionary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, glossary of terms, if you will.
All right.
First duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth, scientific truth, or historical truth, or personal truth.
Okay, Adam, we've danced around it a little bit, but let's talk about Kevin Uxbridge.
Kevin Uxbridge, maybe the most popular recurring character impression on our show.
Yeah.
He arrives on Star Trek The Next Generation in the beginning of its third season. And once we met him, we could not get him out of our minds.
Yeah. I feel like it's weird. So he's in the episode The Survivors. And I feel like
kind of what we do, right? We find a random tertiary character and we elevate that character into prominence.
Yeah. Yeah. And like a character that I didn't care about in an episode that I didn't care about when I was first watching this as like a 9-year old. But now, like, I think about Kevin every day.
Yeah. Me too.
So this is, I believe, is the first time in the episode about Kevin and Rashaan that you break out the Kevin Uxbridge impression.
And I did it first?
I think you did it first.
Wow. I haven't heard this since then.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I was really surprised at how this clip goes. So give it a listen.
So Kevin disappears and we cut to a shot of the doctor like running into Troy's room. And I don't know if they meant for this to be the thing, but Kevin is standing over Troy's bed reaching for her, and it almost looks like he's going for a boob when Crusher walks in.
He's like, oh, I was just removing this music from her head. One song only. Your best. Losers always whine about their best. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen.
When did Kevin get replaced by Captain Aramius?
A while ago. So he just sort of he waves his hand over her head, and the music is gone, and he goes back to the planet to live out the rest of his days in privacy, huh?
Mm-hmm. I think the last thing is that they're gonna put like one of their signature warning beacons not to go around the planet.
That is so emblematic of so many of our impressions, which is just like, how can we make an impression fit more within our comfort level and ability of impressions? And like, I just, early on, I just turned Kevin into Sean Connery. Yeah. What a hack. Why did I do that? Kevin Uxbridge sounds a lot better in later episodes.
Yeah, well, it's definitely like, I think that one of the weirder things about our show is that like, we kind of share many of these characters. Like there's a couple that just you do or just I do, but Kevin is a character that we like, we toss the ball back and forth and it's the two of us playing one guy.
Yeah.
We have
joint custody of Kevin Uxbridge.
But that was really fun to go back and re-listen to. And definitely a character that there's a cosmology of Kevin Uxbridge that lives within Greatest Gen that has almost nothing to do at this point with the Kevin Uxbridge we meet in Star Trek The Next Generation, but we're fully obsessed. We named our company partially after Jim Shimoda and partially after Kevin Uxbridge.
That's right. Yeah.
Speaking
gives
of...
Gives us great strength.
Speaking of our company... Adam, this next clip actually is to do with the fact that we had to found a corporation at a certain point, and it was in the founding of our corporation and the taking of our podcast from an embarrassing side project to being sort of a thing that we had to go out and like do real shit in the world about, that this next clip came up. This is so our listeners are called the Friends of DeSoto, or our viewers, I should say, are called the Friends of DeSoto. And this is the clip where we came up with that as the nomenclature.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, I took care of Greatest Generation Business yesterday. It's how business gets done.
TCB.
I spent a good 90 minutes at a bank. That's a thing that people do. They just sit there and they watch a bank person enter information into a computer on a screen with one of those reflective covers to it so that you can't see what they're typing in.
They're typing in bit of a dick. They're flagging your account.
They're like, extra die packs for this guy.
Die packs all around. You get a die pack. You get a die pack. You get a die pack.
Recently learned that the die pack was like an aerosol bomb. I didn't think that was the thing. I thought it was more paint-like. Like, ew, it's all over my hands and clothes, but it's actually like a poof.
Yeah. So what then? They just know that you're... It's just evidence if you're poofed, right?
I guess. I mean, the answers are still coming in, which is fun. Like, I'm still reading tweet replies to that episode.
People have no idea what we're talking about because we are so far in the future.
Yeah, I know. This is like 6 episodes ago. We should stop. Anyway, I was at the bank taking care of company business because by the time this episode goes out, this will be the first day of our tour. And we need to have a way to deal with the tour that is responsible. And banks are a big, big way to do that.
The way we did it on our last tour was like if we sold a merch item, we would take the money and put it in a box. And then at the end, we just kind of took a pair of scissors and cut all the money we had in half. And then you took one half and I took the other half. And it turns out that's not how money works, Adam.
It's not, especially when you cut through the die pack.
Yeah, why were people paying us with die packs?
The feeling of talking to 2 bank employees, telling them what the name of your business was, having them ask you what kind of business you're in, and then ask you what type of show you make. I mean, there's just nothing like it, Ben. The confusion, the quizzical furrowed brow, like... Like, there's 7 steps of podcast business acceptance on the other end. Like, we've talked a lot about those steps for you and me, but, like, when you're trying to do business with someone and explain why it is you're there.
Yeah.
Like, there's a good couple of seconds where the lady, like, just sort of pushed back from her keyboard, leaned back in her office chair and was like, "Can't believe this is our world." Can't believe I'm doing this. What is it all for?
I mean, this, like, these people must have to open accounts for like pornography businesses and shit too, right? Like,
one would hope.
Like, some dingling got a $50,000 loan from his father and opened a dildo store with it.
The scene was like, I was very obviously working with a trainee, with a trainer. Sat right next to this person.
Oh, that's even better, because they can be like, this is not normal. This is not like a typical... This.
I kept getting the vibe that the trainer knew and was a viewer.
Oh.
And I kept wanting for there to be some sort of code between us.
Yeah.
Like you know the whole Friends with Dorothy code? Like, could there be like a Friends of Shimoda type thing where, like, if you are in mixed company and you aren't sure and you just want to, like, be sure in a safe way, like,
yeah.
All she had to say was like, "Oh yeah, I'm friends with Shimoda."
Yeah,
that would have put me at ease completely.
So that wouldn't make any sense if you just like offered it.
Yeah,
but like
they would have to offer it.
Yeah, would they say to you, "Do you happen to know a guy in the biz named Jim Shimoda?"
That would have been great.
Yeah.
And then I could be like, "Oh yeah, we are business associates. We've taken meetings together. Great guy."
Unfortunately, Shimoda is in the name of the biz, so that would maybe more of a tell than the banker would have wanted. What's something else?
Friends of the Hood. I guess that has a whole lot of different meanings too.
Friends of DeSoto.
Friends of DeSoto could work.
Friends of DeSoto seems nice and obscure.
Yeah. It's second level knowledge.
Like, big, big fans of TNG don't even know who Captain DeSoto is.
Yeah. I'm into that. Friends of DeSoto. Did you ever work with DeSoto? Oh, yeah. Best boss I ever had. How about watching that take on? That would be great.
That would be amazing. So if you see us at the live show tonight, come up and give us a wink. Ask us if we're friends of DeSoto.
And the password answer to that question is best boss I ever had.
I love it.
That was amazing to hear come together.
I know.
I hadn't remembered that initially, like, we had auditioned a couple of different versions of that code.
Yeah, yeah. I think, it seemed to me like you kind of, like, had the idea, like, before we sat down to record, and we kind of, like, beat it into shape. But I remember, like, so that was you getting us ready for our first big national tour. We'd gone on a little West Coast tour the year before, but this is the first time we were going out and doing the show all over the country. And I don't remember what city we were in, but I remember that night, the night that episode aired, we played a show and we were like sitting in front of a full theater full of people. And like from the stage asked, are you friends of DeSoto? And in unison, they just gave us back best boss I ever had. And I could not believe like how well that caught on, like, and it's like a thing, you know.
Yeah, for ever since that day, I've been approached on the street by a friend of DeSoto asking me the challenge question.
I was in a bar in LA and with like my wife and some friends, and a guy came up to me and asked me in front of the whole group, and we did the exchange and he was like, nice to meet you, and walked away, and they were like, what the fuck just happened? What is that?
Perfect interaction.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things that's ever happened with the show.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's become a thing to do with a person. And it also turned itself into like challenge coins that we've sold on tour on occasion. Like the idea of there being a secret society of Greatest Gen viewers and there being these talismans and code words.
Yeah.
Has made it a lot of fun to be a little bit embarrassed to be a viewer of a Star Trek podcast.
It makes me feel so fortunate that like the listeners like got the fun of that in the same way that we did, and that we like all can kind of have that little inside joke with each other. It's really cool.
It'll outlive us all.
It will. So that was my last clip from our TNG review days. When we went to Deep Space Nine, we decided to take it down to one episode per week. And I think that was like pretty closely timed with when Star Trek Discovery started airing. So we pretty quickly had two episodes per week again with Greatest Discovery.
Do you remember how much of an argument that was to take it down to one?
I mean, we went back and forth because it was very hard to know whether like we were going to even have an audience. Like every time we've done something that changed the show has been really scary. Like going to Deep Space Nine by itself was scary because I was like, I don't know if there is as much passion in the world for Deep Space Nine. Maybe we should just go back and start reviewing TNG from episode one again.
Yeah, that was definitely one of our ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I had anxiety about going, about moving on to Voyager too, because I was conscious of the fact that Voyager was less popular than either Deep Space Nine or TNG. But honestly, like it's put like a whole new wind in our sails. Like it's always been good, honestly. Every time we've like had a transitional moment like that, it's always been good.
Every time we get to the final season of a Star Trek series, We're feeling like we're about done.
We get a little punchy. Yeah. But taking it to one episode a week was probably the best thing we could have done. And it's honestly made editing an even bigger part of the show. And I thought I'd play a couple of clips from the Deep Space Nine years. This first one is from very early in Deep Space Nine. And one thing that changed when we ended our TNG run and started Deep Space Nine is we were not as familiar with Deep Space Nine as we were with TNG. So in TNG, every episode that we ended, we would talk about what the next episode would be and whether or not we wanted to veto watching it. And the veto rule just didn't feel like it would work in the Deep Space Nine era because we didn't know enough about what we would be vetoing. Like, right. TNG, we had memorized, basically.
Yeah.
So we switched to this this new thing, the Game of Buttholes, the Will of the Prophets, which forces us on occasion to record in an unusual way. And one of those ways is just to get drunk while recording. But we also often we'll record two episodes in one day, and occasionally we will do a drunk episode as the first of two. And this episode that I'm about to play is season one, episode 15 of Deep Space Nine, which is a bad episode of Deep Space Nine that we rolled into our record of already fully torn up from the previous episode that we recorded.
This is one of the Friends of DeSoto's favorite episodes that we've ever done.
Yeah.
It's called Consensual Mornhammer.
And this is probably the moment in the episode where we lose it the hardest.
So what's going on here in fairly short order is that it's not just Rumpelstiltskin that's becoming real. It's imaginary characters are becoming real, like baseball stars that Jake inserts bats into in his holosuite programs.
Yeah, and versions of Jadzia Dax that Bashir inserts bats into.
It's bats all the way down, Ben, and yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah, so there's like an oversexed Dax, a baseball star that comes from the London Kings baseball club, and Rumpelstiltskin have all manifested themselves, and the senior staff are like, WTF, mate? Like, where did we get all of these crazy characters from?
Benjamin Shishko, Major Kira, the rest of the senior staff. I'm registering my complaint in an official manner to state that my real doll business is the foremost purveyor of fake characters turned real.
If you want to fantasize about boning down with somebody or something, you come to Kevin Exbridge first and foremost.
I've said it time and time again, my real dolls are bat-proof. The Kevin Uxbridge bat shield of quality that you can depend on for durability.
Our Buck Bokai famously took two Louisville Sluggers in one hole.
Around the office, we called him...
Are you going to say fuck Bokai?
Yeah.
Oh, Kevin. Oh, Kevin, you've never made us laugh that hard ever.
I'm crying.
I got a lot of tequila in me at this point, Adam.
Oh, this is the dumbest episode we've ever done.
That still gets me.
Yeah, still makes me laugh.
Oh, that's I mean, that's funny to hear the like evolution of Kevin in that, because
yeah, that like, sounds very little like the earlier Kevin.
Not nearly as Scottish, I guess you could say.
A lot of people thought Deep Space Nine was like the the serious Star Trek, we managed to find a lot of fun there.
We did. There's, I mean, I have really been feeling like a new energy from Voyager as being less serious than Deep Space Nine, especially toward the end. But
yeah,
even toward the end, we were finding fun characters in Deep Space Nine. And one of my favorite recent ones is Tulare Kadavid. Let's listen to a clip.
You wouldn't think that you would need like tons and tons of lead time for an order of Gach. But that's what's happened here, because Ezri is receiving Gach that was ordered by Jadzia.
I can imagine being behind the Klingon at the 51 Flavors Gach franchise, where the guy just wants a noodle sample of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So obnoxious.
Yeah.
A lot of murders happen in the line at the 51 Flavors.
Yeah.
Because they're Klingons, and they're very violent.
If you get Tulare Kadavid behind you, he's going to tell you, he's going to give you a piece of his mind.
Try one or two. Do not try everything in the case.
It's just cruel to the employee behind the counter. We all have other places to be.
Also, I noticed in the parking lot, your red Volvo was a little bit over the line. So I had to be a little bit over the line. And then the next car that comes in, and so on and so forth.
And why can't I get these little spoons to use at home? It seems like the only place you can get a sample spoon is at a 51 Flavors.
Tulare Kadavid.
One of the qualities of our show over the years is like, we definitely inject it with the thing that we're enjoying outside of the show.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
There are runs of the show that have more happy endings clips than others. There are some runs of the show that have a ton of Curb Your Enthusiasm in it.
Yeah.
Like over the years, you can kind of deign what our obsessions are outside of the show based on the clips that we use to make jokes with.
There have been Vanderpump Rules runs.
Yeah.
I love citing different material and bringing them into the show.
Yeah.
I do try to keep my drops at like a ratio of at least 50-50. Like, I want to be pulling stuff from the episode we're talking about in particular, but I also want to like bring in stuff that it kind of makes me think of or you know, seems funny in the context of.
Yeah. And I think one thing I like about our show specifically is like, we don't talk about a moment and then you hear a clip from that moment. We talk about a moment and then use a bit of dialogue from that moment that kind of twists it.
Yeah.
In some fun directions. And that's been like, that's the fun of editing our show. That's why I continue to find it fun to edit our shows as the years go on. It's like, I'm always trying to get that a little bit better. I'm always trying to hit that a little bit harder or weirder.
Yeah.
In a way that works comedically.
Yeah. And I think one thing that you've gotten very, very good at in particular is like chopping up the dialogue from the episode to make the character sound even more insane.
Yeah.
or like, you know, put words in their mouth, like, you know, connect two statements that were never connected in the episode.
Yeah.
That stuff gets me every time you do it. And I'm definitely not as good at that as you are.
I think when we started reviewing episodes of Star Trek Voyager, that quality to our show really came to the fore.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think one of my favorite bits from that show is taking an early episode clip of Captain Janeway saying there's coffee in that nebula, and now it is an every episode refrain about coffee being in something from that episode.
Yeah, like Janeway's like number one character need is get the crew home safely, but her number two character need is want a cup of coffee right now.
Yeah.
And so anytime, like, it's so funny, like, going through the edit, because you think about, like, what does Janeway want in this scene? Mm-hmm. And that really takes, like, our review, our edit of our own review, and takes it back to a thing that you do in writing an episode of something.
Yeah.
Is, like, every
every scene that you write, you want to think about what the characters want and how they're advocating for that within the scene. And that's how you like create drama, is like, will the character get the thing they want in the scene or not? And so basically every scene Janeway is in is a potential scene where you could find her saying there's coffee in that something.
Yeah.
Because something is just the thing that Janeway considers to be in the way of her getting coffee.
It's what makes it a delight every episode of the Voyager run of the series. It's been great. I love being surprised every time I QA an up you've edited.
I have 8 examples of this.
Whoa, cool. Okay.
I think one or two of them have some surrounding dialogue, but most of them are just, there's coffee in that blanks.
There's coffee in transporter room 2.
It's just a location.
There's coffee in that ice cream.
It's not that outlandish, you know? You could have coffee ice cream.
Affogato sounds great.
There's coffee in the polyferronite we need to seal the warp coils.
Kes accidentally freshens up Tuvok's face and brain in a very disgusting way.
There's coffee in Tuvok.
That was just the kind of happenstance that you look for in an edit where it's like, oh man, like we're talking about warming up somebody's cup of coffee by pouring more coffee into it. And I have this, there's coffee in that edit clip that I need to get into the edit somewhere. Perfect.
You can check that box.
There's coffee in your optimism. There's coffee in the kind of tampering the Prime Directive prohibits.
Sometimes you really get lucky with the levels where where it edits like nice and smooth.
The background music is similar enough that it doesn't get clunky as you transition from one clip to the other. It's a tricky clip because there's coffee in that. In that really runs together as two sounds, and sometimes you don't want the that. You want it to just be there's coffee in blank.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's another one.
There's coffee in that salvage operation.
Sometimes you do want the that.
Yeah.
There's coffee in the vaunted Q continuum.
That was a recent one.
That's the most recent one I've edited as of this record. So that's one that felt like it really like transitioned nicely to me.
Captain Janeway has had a lot of moments that really pissed her off this season. We're right now in season 2 of Star Trek Voyager, really liking the series quite a bit.
Yeah.
This has been a big, big season for Catherine Janeway. I think part of the fun of speaking retrospectively about all of the Star Trek series that we've reviewed is like having just so much source material.
Yeah.
And like what's interesting about thinking about the last couple of seasons in Star Trek Voyager is I think how dense it is with jokes already, stuff that we've come up with that are new just for Voyager.
Yeah. So we put out a couple of calls and we probably should have done this up top, but it is worth saying in this episode that we have to thank the Friends of DeSoto who helped us by suggesting clips and moments from the show for this episode.
Yeah. We could not have done this ourselves.
Yeah. Specifically, J Poop and the folks over at the DrunkShimoda.com Discord group who you asked to source a lot of these clips and time code. But I also just put a request up on Twitter this morning, and a lot of people called out this particular clip from a recent episode of our Voyager coverage in which we came up with the idea of ASMR ship self-destruct sequence. She's got a friend in him, but he about to die. And so she starts to put plans in place for a self-destruct. And I think this may be, is this the first time we've seen Voyager self-destruct as a thing on the table?
I mean, it's Star Trek law. You need to set auto-destruct within the first 2 seasons of any Star Trek series.
Yeah.
They had to do it at some point. before the end of season two, and here we are. I love auto-destruct scenes. Love them every time.
They're fucking great. And yeah, there's a great like moment in the bridge where she kind of goes into the corner where Chakotay and Tuvok are, and she's like, hey, guys, I'm about to blow up the ship. Make sure nobody panics. Let's be super chill and get everybody to the escape pods. I'm going to do it, okay?
Look, when they did this on the D, it was a bunch of fucking kids in arms dropping teddy bears all over the place. We need this one tight and orderly. No bears on the ground.
Picard is a fucking amateur when it comes to dropping the self-destruct hammer. He made it look like a moral crime. My moral crime comes later in this season. Right now, I'm all about preventing the deaths of 2 million Rakosians or whatever the people are on that planet down there. All right, so just get everybody off the bridge. Just be super chill.
I like that this is auto-destruct ASMR. Like,
Tuvok, I'm about to blow up the ship. I'm going to blow up our fucking warp core. Just all over this fucking Scion XB. Never going to see it coming.
Okay, but first I'm going to crumple up my orders from Starfleet, because they're just printed out on a piece of paper, and we're in the Delta Quadrant, and I've been meaning to do this, but just, I want to...
Hey, Tuvok, lean into this mic. I'm going to rub those ears into the mic. You feel how smooth this panel is? You hear that? You hear that squeak? That's nice.
It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you got to find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
Okay, Adam, we promised the folks a glossary of terms. If this is the first time you're listening to anything The Greatest Generation related, you probably already heard a lot of terms that you didn't know what they were or what they meant. This is just a total side effect of our show, is that we've come up with this huge list of terminology that is pretty much meaningless outside of the world of our podcast.
Yeah, it's sort of the Greatest Generation show bible, really.
Yeah. Another great resource is greatestgen.fandom.com is a wiki that listeners to the show have put together over the years that tracks a lot of the origins of these things, or like defines the terms. But I thought that you and I could go through these. I just made like a quick list, and I thought we could like see if we agree on like what their origin and meaning is, because I'm guessing we don't like agree entirely on some of these.
Oh yeah, that works for me. Let's run them down.
All right. So the first one is loaf.
I'm almost positive that you came up with this term as a name for the amount of makeup that's put on an actor's face and head area to play an alien on Star Trek.
Yeah, I think this actually is one of the jokes that you and I made that predates actually making this podcast, which is... Mm-hmm. There was a big run of jokes that you and I did on Twitter and in text messages to each other that kind of I think of as the kind of antecedents of us deciding to make a podcast together.
Right.
And I think this was a tweet that I said that in season one, Worf's makeup looked like it was made out of meatloaf.
Yeah.
And so anytime we talk about like alien makeup or the... You know, the prosthetics that they put on people to make them look like aliens in Star Trek, we tend to refer to it as loaf.
Yeah. Yeah, the next word on our list is Dustbuster, Ben. So this is something we haven't talked about in a while, because the Dustbuster-style phaser was such an early development in early Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, I mean, they still look like Dustbusters on Voyager, but they've gotten a little sleeker and a little bit more chic.
Yeah, the rounded Dustbuster look of those early TNG episodes, nothing like it.
Yeah, yeah, they were clearly made out of, like, Fimo modeling clay.
And, of course, you know, the Dustbuster beget the Dustbuster Club,
yeah,
which is the name for the away teams that would carry the Dustbusters.
Yeah. Because you're always like strapping a dustbuster on as you get together with your buddies to go down to the surface. So.
Yeah, yeah.
The term slickback.
It sounds like something awful. It sounds like a slur, but I promise you it is instead about... There was a trend in Star Trek The Next Generation where characters who had gone through a traumatic event that involved the death of their parents slicked back their hair.
Yeah.
Or arrived with hair already slicked back that we would then determine meant that they were orphaned by their dead parents.
Yeah, we called it the Slickback Trilogy, and then I think over the course of TNG, we found that there were way more than just three of these kids.
Yeah.
But there's like the one that like... is he's like a human kid that was adopted by like a general in some warlike alien species military, and so he like believes all this fucked up military shit, and like Picard is like trying to convince him not to. There's a kid whose parents die on an away mission. There's so many slickbacks. TNG is like in retrospect a show about orphans, and there are myriad examples of said orphans, which is another term from this show.
So many of the terms of art, again, I'm going to put that in quotes, for this show happen because of misspeaking. And with the word Miriam, that was a word that I introduced based on a friend of mine's misspeaking. When they intended to say myriad, they said Miriam. And I've never let this friend forget it. And I will never let the friends of DeSoto forget it, because I use it instead of myriad every chance I get.
One of the things that blew me away about Miriam when I was like listening back to old episodes of ours was how early that started. I forget.
Yeah.
Like I was like in an episode that was earlier than I would have predicted.
I used it many times before you finally asked me what the hell I was doing, which I think that suggests your patience with me and your kindness. Because if I had heard you say that over a period of episodes, I would have been like, immediately, I would have kicked you in the nuts about it.
Yeah. Well, one example of that is Six Bay, which I discovered is a term that we introduced in the Clip Show episode. In
really?
Season 2, episode 22, is when I misspoke. I said Six Bay. And I think like I made fun of myself for it, like as a defense mechanism, because I knew that you were like winding up.
Yeah, I had pulled the trebuchet back.
Yeah, yeah. I felt the ball kicking machine warming up, and and that has become a term that we both use. But also, that was like very early in TNG, and one thing that I loved, because they talk about it as the infirmary in Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been out of my life for a long time, but over the course of my TNG edits, I would love finding audio of the doctor referring to sickbay and then another S sound that she made somewhere else in her dialogue, and like dropping the S sound in the edit just so that it made it sound like she said six bay.
That's when you did that, it was such a delight. Entrepreneur is another one of those that came early and then stuck.
Yeah. So that my memory of the origin of that is my wife and I were walking by a stadium, like a newly built stadium in Brooklyn, and she said, "It looks like the Entrepreneur," and I could not wrap my mind around what she was talking about. And she said, like, you know, from Star Trek. And I was like, oh, you mean the Enterprise.
So amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Like, she is very funny and very smart lady, but not at all interested in Star Trek. And the way she talks about what I do for a living and, like, what characters there are on the show is very funny to me. Like, she doesn't know which one is Geordi and which one is Data.
Yeah.
And And that's always been funny to me. Like, if one of them is on the screen, I'll like pause it and be like, which one is it? And she'll be like, hey, it's Jordy. I'll be like, it's not Jordy.
That's fun.
It's just not part of her cultural experience, you know?
It's great. Like, the assumption that Star Trek is a part of everyone's cultural experience is like, it's been really fun to realize how untrue that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's people for whom it's the only thing, and there's people for whom it couldn't be less important.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes it fun to hear about your relationship in that way.
Big Rod is a term that's from our early days and something we still talk about to this day.
Yeah. When we were first developing the show, part of where the pushback came from was from the idea of a Star Trek industrial complex and their official affiliated shows.
Yeah.
Being in the pocket of Big Rod was a way to describe projects, people, and shows that were officially sanctioned by Star Trek. And because all of those were inside the pocket, that emphasized the idea that we would then position ourselves outside of that pocket, where we have remained forever.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I don't know. There was definitely, like, a lot of insecurity on our part early on. I mean, we're very insecure men in general, but especially early on in making this show. You know, we encountered official Star Trek things that seemed like, you know, that we interpreted falsely as threats to our existence just because they existed.
Yeah. And now, like, having met a number of people who work in the pocket, who make shows in the pocket, lovely people, all of them.
Yeah.
It's been, and also, like, speaking self-referentially, Ben, like, we're now in touch with people who work at Paramount. People who work on the shows come to our live shows, and we've met them and enjoyed their company. Like, we're not going to be inside the pocket in such a way that we can't be honest about how we feel about Star Trek.
Right.
We are getting a few of the benefits of that, I would say. But we're always going to be fiercely independent when it comes to our opinions.
Okay, here's a more obscure one. Chaotic Bro.
Chaotic Bro had to do with the very first appearance of a Benzite on the show, which is like the blue, wet alien who had a vape pen strapped to the front of their uniform, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And that name stuck. Every time a Benzite is on screen,
yeah,
we're always calling back the Chaotic Bro that we met the very first time.
Yeah, we, we've had a lot of fun with those guys over the year. How about Bunk Bed and Previa, Adam?
Well, these are names that we gave to the different styles of Starfleet shuttlecraft.
Yeah, yeah. The Previas are like the bigger shuttles that you see in TNG.
Yeah, the round-looking shuttles that came later, I feel like the earlier shuttles on TNG were the bunk bed variety that looked like flat pack bunk bed IKEA build jobs.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The ship definitely had both types at a certain point, but those really angular ones we call the bunk beds, and they're bunk beds on Voyager, so
yeah.
it's fun to have them back. They didn't have any bunk beds or previas on Deep Space Nine.
And now I really missed them.
Yeah. all right, how about this is one that's got a long and storied history. Natural Jaeger.
Yeah, so in the first run of episodes in TNG, there was an actor named Biff Jaeger, who played an engineer on the show. One of the earlier engineers was named Argyle, and the story about Biff Jaeger and Argyle is too long to tell on this episode, but I developed such an affection for him through that story that once we started opening packs of Star Trek trading cards, I kept looking for a Jaeger, thinking that because there was a card for every character, eventually we would open up a pack and there would be Argyle there. There would be Biff Jaeger's face staring right back.
And famously, like, there are packs in circulation where he has signed his cards, and his signed cards are in the packs.
Well, that's not exactly true. So there are autographed cards in these packs, and we kept on finding autographed cards of many actors, and we had heard that there was an autographed card signed by Biff Jaeger.
Oh.
What we didn't know was that the Biff Jaeger cards were box toppers. They were cards included when you bought a case of these cards. If you owned a collectible shop and you bought by the case, you would be rewarded with one of these Jaegers. So we kept opening these packs over and over again, seeking a natural Jaeger. That is to say, a Jaeger that was in a pack that we had opened.
Yeah, that's been in a pack for 20 years and nobody knew it was in there.
Not knowing that we would never find a natural Jaeger. So eventually, I noticed on eBay that these Jaegers were sold for between 99 cents and $5. And what I decided to do was buy every single natural Jaeger I could find. And eventually, I didn't tell anyone I was doing this.
Yeah.
Eventually, I unveiled the Jaeger bubble as a concept, an economic concept, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Where these...
This is a lot like Planet Money, but for Star Trek cards.
I have 40 natural Jaegers in my collection, all bought between $2 and $5. If you went to eBay right now and looked to buy a natural Jaeger, they are hundreds of dollars now.
Adam has the largest collection of Biff Jaeger trading cards on planet Earth.
Yeah.
And this despite the fact that for a long time at every single live show that we did, we would tape a Biff Jaeger trading card under one of the seats in the theater for a lucky friend of DeSoto to take home with them.
I don't know if I want to do that anymore. They're too valuable. But yeah, that was a thing. Every show we gave one away.
Puts butts in seats, Adam. Somebody could win $100. I mean, they don't have any other incentive to come to one of our live shows, right?
Right. Right. So that's the story of the natural Jaeger and the Jaeger bubble.
Man.
Which still exists years later.
We got to find a character in Voyager that merits that kind of... We have like...
Who's going to be bubble-worthy in Voyager? Know. Is it Tuvix? You keep telling me Tuvix is going to be a big deal.
Tuvix is going to be a big deal when we get to it.
The thing about Tuvix is he's already popular in a way that Jaeger was not.
Yeah, yeah. All right. This last one, Maquis, is one that new listeners to the show, I often see... fucking hate this because it's such a big part of Voyager. It's a big part of the end of TNG and a running thing in Deep Space Nine as well.
I blame Star Trek The Next Generation for this.
Yeah.
There was a character on that show named Maquis.
Yeah. In the episode with Kirsten Dunst.
Right. Yeah. And Waxana Troy says this person's name.
Maquis?
We pulled it as a clip. We've been using it ever since the Maquis became a concern on the show.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not our fault. It's the show's fault.
Yeah. It's just one of the many things that we intentionally mispronounce.
Right.
All right. Well, that's all I had planned out on the show sheet for today's episode.
This is great.
This is a lot of fun.
This feels like a performance review in some way, Ben.
Yeah, it's been honestly kind of wild to go back through old clips of our shows. I mean, even just the stuff that we played on the episode today, like I'm listening to it and I'm like, as an editor, I've got 5 years of this under my belt now and I'm hearing it and I'm like, ooh, I would have probably tightened that up and massaged the way this gets said and, you know, done this a little bit differently. And listening to old episodes, I'm like, here is a joke that was right there for the taking and neither of us thought of it. And here's a joke that I wish neither of us had said. There's so many moments like that.
But also it has been really fun to like think back on, you know, all of the like, all of the fun times that we have had making this thing. And I hope the clip show was enough of a crash course to get someone interested in listening to the show as a new listener.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, it's so much fun to make, and like that part hasn't changed over the years. We still, against all odds, you and I remain great friends and business partners.
Yeah.
Been one of the great things in my life has been The Greatest Gen and doing it with you.
Yeah, man. And also like, it's just a thing that like we both find has the power to like change the direction of our day. Like pretty common occurrence is that one or the other of us will come to a record kind of not feeling it. And by the time we heat the mics up and get into an episode, we're just having a great time, and then
yeah,
walk away from it and, you know, text the other person later like, hey man, thank you for that. I didn't realize how much I needed it.
Yeah, it's so reliable for us, and it's such a joy to hear how reliable it is to a viewer out in the world who could use a little bit of a pick-me-up too. So
yeah,
that's been a great, great part of this project, and it's one of the reasons we keep doing it, and we'll continue to do it as long as they keep making Star Trek.
Yeah. So subscribe to the show, and if you're watching the new Star Trek, subscribe to The Greatest Discovery and leave us a nice review.
And now that you know what our viewers are called, you can become a friend of DeSoto. You can meet other friends of DeSoto online and all of the usual social media places.
Yeah.
Lots of friends to be made out there. I think our audience are by and large so fun and so kind. And just great, great people. So get out there and make some friends around this Dick and Fart Joke podcast.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.